Well, good morning, beloved. It's great to see you this morning. I bring greetings to you from the global office of the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship. It's just up the road in Decatur, Georgia, and from our coordinator, Susie Painter. When I am not with you on Sundays, I'm usually at Smoke Rise Baptist Church, worshiping with the faithful there. They are a sister church and a partner church with you in ministry. I bring you greetings from Smoke Rise and from our senior pastor, Chris George. I want to thank Pastors Carrie and Nathan Dean for the invitation to preach this morning. I also want to thank you, church, for your hospitality. It is something that I have loved and cherished this past year, for the rich worship services, for the beloved community, and for the incarnational witness that we share together. Thank you, and thanks be to God. Today's a rare Sunday for me. I don't usually lead music and preach. So if you thought the music was good, lead with that. If you think the sermon is good, well, I know what you thought of the music. Of course, I'm not going to let you off the hook that easily. A church's music requires participation if it's to be any good, just as a preacher's sermon needs active listeners to hear if it's to be any good. I trust that you are as excited about this series on Proverbs as I am. Ancient Wisdom for Keeping Life on the Rails. It's a perfect title. For thousands of years, followers of the Lord have been comparing notes on how life works best. These insights are what the Bible calls wisdom, with a capital W. This wisdom is passed down from generation to generation in short teachings or sayings that we call Proverbs. You got it. It is these proverbs that bring hope for the future generations that they won't have to learn through heartache and the chaos of trial and error. Some of you know what that means, right? Yeah. I think we've all been there, done that. As my mom says, those who can't listen have to learn. Those who can't listen have to learn. And these proverbs are a precious gift that were given long ago for you and me so that we would live into God's dream, not just for our personal lives, but also for the world. So you might be wondering, why are we starting a series of proverbs in chapter 5 instead of chapter 1? Yeah, me too. But today's passage was intentionally chosen to emphasize what I'm calling the hashtag Proverbs Challenge. I know what you're thinking. He's too hip for us. I'm trying. Thank you for being patient, right? Today is the 5th of June, and since there are 31 chapters of Proverbs, you have one for each day of the month. Now, I would like to challenge you to read a chapter of Proverbs each day for the rest of this month. So tomorrow, let's go to chapter 6. Right, you got it. Man, here we go. Hot dog. Now, I realize that there are only 30 days in the month of June. I get it. So I expect you to read two on the last Thursday of this month. Proverbs 30 in the morning. Proverbs 31 in the evening. And ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, Proverbs 31, that's our standard. All right? So we want to hit Proverbs 31. You'll thank me later. When I first agreed to preach, I had this Proverbs challenge on my mind. And then I read Proverbs 5 and thought, I might want to change my mind about this challenge. Or as Michelle said this morning, I'm interested to see where you're going with this. I think I'll just reread it and sit down. What do you think? After studying Proverbs a bit, I realized that the first 9 chapters address sexual behavior in some way. And so if a nearly one-third of the entire book of Proverbs is dedicated to sexuality, there must be something we can glean today about how to live morally in an immoral world. No one wants discipline until they have it. No one wants discipline until they have it. It's hard to have self-discipline before you receive external discipline from a coach, from a teacher or a supervisor, or perhaps a friend or a parent. Look with me at Proverbs 5, verse 1, if you've got it. It says, my child, some translations say my son, but we're going to be a little flexible on the pronouns. Can we? Give me that license. All right. My child, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to understanding. And now, my child, listen to me and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Now, let's check verse 7 out. Now, my child, listen to me. Do not depart from the words of my mouth. Okay. I think it means for us to hone in, to listen, to perk our ears. There was a distinct time in my life when my dad asked me to listen very carefully. And I want you to travel with me in your minds. Travel with me to Southwest Virginia. It's a small two-story brick home in the Roanoke Valley. You can tell the neighborhood is tightly knit. The children wave to you on their bikes as you pass by. You'll see a man mowing his lawn, but he starts at his house and he mows straight to the neighbor's house. And he pulls it back. You know, he's pushing it. It's a close-knit community. If you pull up to Blair Street, you'll see this house, the house that built me. It has a dark red door. It matched the dark red bricks. And the story continues one evening as you open the door and you walk up the winding stairs and into the only full bathroom in the place. As you walk in, you see the sink right here. You see the bathtub here. And then right here behind the door is the toilet. Pretty standard. Before my dad put in a shower head and a shower surround, we all took baths. So that night was like any other night. I'd been playing outside. I needed a bath. This is before, after Mom stopped bathing me. So, it was cool for me to bathe. Prior to that, I just didn't want to. Y'all been there? So this night, I turned the water on and let it rise about where my knees would be if I sat in it. Just above my knees. And I got in. It was hot. Of course, you had to turn the water on, wait till all the cold is done, and then plug it, and then you're good. So I did. I got in, and I'm taking my washcloth, soaping it up, doing my best outcast impression. So fresh and so clean, clean. Y'all don't know nothing about that. About the time I was finished, a knock on the bathroom door. Now, in our house, you couldn't lock the bathroom door in case something happened to you. You fell asleep, you went under the water, no go. Dad didn't want to kick the door down. He just wanted to open it and be like, yo, what's going on? So, he knocked on the door, and I'm thinking, hey, Dad, I'm almost done. But you know Dad. Hey, man, I just want to talk to you real quick. What, Dad? Craig, look, man, if I see something I hadn't seen before, I'll shoot it. Word. Oh, okay. What in the world are you talking about? Craig, I need to talk to you for a minute. And so he, again, sink, bathtub, toilet. My dad sits on the toilet. He said, hey, buddy, let's talk about some things. And folks, I'm dying if I'm lying here. I filled and refilled the bathtub 4 times because the water got cold. I just want to talk to you real quick. There's nothing about my dad that's real quick when it comes to talking. Nothing. Boy, my hands were prunes. I thought, my mom, it's you get pruned hands and then there's like indentions in it. You've been there. That's what it was. I'm like, oh man, this will never fix. I'm going to be a raisin my whole life. Well, anyway, Dad walked out, and I was like, what just happened to me? This is the worst. Now, we covered a few things. We went through a few talks, and then back around to the talks, and then just when I thought we were done, Craig, I don't know if you heard me, listen up. I felt like I was going to cry, weep. I mean, it was very traumatic, right? Okay. So, Dad leaves. I draw off, go to bed. The next morning after breakfast, Mom goes, hey, Craig, would you like to go with me to the mall? Now, what kind of question is that? I played it cool, though. Sure. Okay, great. So I'm telling you, folks, she's no more put that sucker in reverse out of our driveway and then threw it back into drive and said, Craig, I've been meaning to talk to you about some things. Mom, you stop right there. you stop right there. If it's about sex, drugs, alcohol, rock and roll, you name, or both, or all, Dad's covered it. Oh, good. I'm glad Dad talked to you. Mom, talk doesn't describe it. And it's fifth grade. Yeah. Fifth grade. Sex talks with your children, with your significant other, with your spouse are good things. But they're not a one and done deal. They are a process that is continual and it's continuous. While my fifth grade sex talk was the first traumatic talk I'll never forget, it wasn't the first time Dad or Mom had a conversation with me about the foolishness of immorality. Nor would it be the last. In Proverbs 5, the parent teacher is having a sex talk with his son or her son or child, warning them against impurity and infidelity. This mentor knows that the strong sexual urges that young people face and they feel, and they don't downplay that reality. In fact, the wisdom giver is such a realist that he knows how thirsty folks can be. You didn't think I knew about that, did you? Folks be thirsty. And not just when it gets hot out here in Atlanta. Golly. But look at the metaphor they use. Water. Water. That's pretty cool. Now, after making a pretty clear, cut and dry definition of an adulterous woman, or we can switch to genders, an adulterous man, twice the mentor offers the consequences of quenching one's thirst for sexual healing. Because when you get that feeling, he tells the child what regret will hold if he ruins and runs his life off the rails. The inner conversation, the inner beatdown that people will give is something like this, verses 12 through 14. Oh, how I hated discipline. My heart despised criticism. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers, nor did I incline my ear to their instruction. Now I'm to the point of utter ruin in the public assembly. Now, we all know how that conversation started, right? Phrases like, don't judge me. You do you, I'm going to do me. Only God can judge me. I fear God. Nobody here has heard those, have you? Nobody's here said those, right? I'm guilty too. I'm preaching uphill today, y'all. You know it's funny how once someone's life jumps off the rails, they're the ones judging themselves. They've been undone by the doing me. Because they really do not fear God or keep God's commandments, God has actually judged them. Instead of repeating empty phrases, why don't you and I adopt some new ones? Can we do that? Let's try it. Here they are. Don't judge me unfairly, right? I mean, come on, let's level with each other. We all stand in judgment of a lot of people, right? You sized me up the first Sunday I came in here, didn't you? It's okay. I know Daryl did. I know Daryl did. Boy, Daryl gave it this number. Turn around, kid. That's weird, Daryl. I'm going to give you a hug, though. He was judging me, but he wasn't judging me unfairly. He wanted to make sure I was all right. He wanted to make sure I could be trusted. It's okay, guys. Let us tell people, don't judge me unfairly. Here's another one. Why don't instead of saying, let me do me, why don't you say, keep me accountable? How about that? How about keep me accountable? Me to what I say. Let my word be my bond. Hey, here's another one. I fear God, so I obey God's word. That's a good one. If you fear God, obey God's word. Here's the thing. A lot of people said, you know, Jesus, my homeboy. I'm fine with that. Here's the deal. In the Bible, it says, Jesus says to his disciples, no longer do I call you servants or slaves, because a servant doesn't know the master's business, but I call you friends if you obey my commandments. So I'm cool with you being Jesus' homeboy, but you got to obey his commandments. He's cool with that too. So how about you and I join the family? Together, you and me, all of us. Here's another one. Subtle changes will transform the trajectory of our thinking, which ultimately saves us heartache, pain, and embarrassment. You don't want discipline until you have it. And no one likes criticism before a crisis. But if you and I will embrace discipline, the root word from which is learning, and accept caring criticism or caring confrontation, the root word from which is examining, we will spare ourselves public shame and the ruining of relationships. Indeed, the lure of lust lands lost. The lure of lust lands lost. There's a beautiful escalating metaphor that is used in this passage by the teacher who is wooing the child to wisdom. Now, this is a contrast into the one who is wooing someone into an affair. Come with me, right? They have sweet words. They talk like oil, but the end is bitterness. It's a two-edged sword. Instead of the wooing of the affair and the de-escalation and the downward dive of an adulterous life, follow me to verse 15. It says, drink from the water of your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be for yourself alone and not for sharing with strangers. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth and the spouse of your youth. The teacher urges here, and by an extension, urges us to quench our sexual thirst by drinking from one's own cistern. The cistern here represents the spouse, and the water represents the satisfaction that is capable of being supplied. But see, it doesn't stop there. A cistern is a man-made receptacle for catching water, right? Cisterns are man-made. We make those. We produce those. It catches runoff. But the image, remember I told you, it escalates quickly. It changes from a cistern into a well. Now, are those the same thing? They're not. A cistern, kind of small, right? Rainwater, runoff, good deal. A well is what? It's deep. It's underground. Also man-made, all right? Also man-made. So one spouse then is not just like a cistern that we catch water in. Our spouse is like a well that contains fresh water supplied by the underground streams. It's filled with drinking water. And a cistern just catches rainwater. Now, cisterns are useful, but I think somewhere in this passage, the teacher's is verbal processing. Trying to grasp and find just the right metaphor, and we'll get there. We'll get there. Not only is it like a cistern or a well, but wait, there's more. The image of the well also changes, this time into a flowing fountain. The teacher appears to be processing verbally, reaching for that right way to explain this intimate love. The son's wife, the spouse, is not just a cistern or a well. She's more like a flowing fountain that produces streams of sexual satisfaction. Your husband is more like a flowing fountain that produces streams of sexual satisfaction. And while that may not be true right now, today, walk with me, shall we? The psalmist writes in Psalm 104 that the streams are not man-made. They are what? Somebody. They're God-made. They're the handiwork of God in Psalm 104, verse 10. Cisterns and wells are man-made products, but streams are God-made. Do you see what the parent is trying to teach? Your spouse is a gift of God's handiwork used for a life long of blessing. You know, as you first start, maybe in marriage, you feel like this is what we're building. We've built this. We're building this. We're just starting out. My friend once told me after his honeymoon, he said, Craig, it was the best, worst sex of my life. I said, dude, what? He said, yeah, man, it was great because I'd never done it, but it was bad compared to what we're up to now. I'm going, that's all I need. That's good. Hey, man, I'm good. We're good there. We're fine. You see, it becomes a cistern, then it goes deeper into a well. The intimacy runs deep, but when you tap into the well, you find the streams that who made? God made those streams. God made those streams, and God gives it to you and me. You see, the Father's strategy here is pretty neat. To emphasize the spouse's capacity to satisfy, these springs and the streams of water flowing through the streets and the public squares. I know what you're thinking. Wait a second. Whoa, 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 whoa. Ha. If the water represents the capacity to satisfy us sexually, then why in the world is this water going all the way through the city? It don't make no sense. Ah. Truth is, the spouse is more than capable of quenching another person's thirst. I'm not going to deny that to you. You know, we tell our children that, you know, there are 8 billion people, 7 billion people in the world, and you choose one, you know, you are compatible with probably a bunch. But when you make the choice for one, then hone in. You know, there, you know, for instance, if you broke up with somebody, what did somebody tell you? Well, there are many fish where? Right. You know, if there are 7 billion people in the world, at least 3.5 are one of the other gender. And then of those 3.5, about half of those are your age. So, man, you got some good chances of meeting somebody. I'm just saying. But the beauty is that we are capable of being compatible with other people. But once we choose the spouse of our youth, we have to recognize that they have the capacity to quench somebody else's thirst, not just ours. So it makes it unnecessary to seek water from another source. At least this is what the teacher's trying to say. These references to the streets flowing with water, I think, are ironic. The wife is capable, or the husband is capable of attracting and satisfying many people. Just like who else? Verse 2. The adulterous woman. The adulterous man. You see the irony here? They could be, the table could be turned on you, pal. But here's the beauty. The wife is capable, the spouse is capable of satisfying others. But despite this tremendous capability, her streams of satisfaction belong to her spouse. The others are off limits. This strategy is pretty clear, I think. Paints this word picture of a cistern filled with water. He transforms the image into a well filled with fresh water and turns the well into a fountain, a gift from God that produces a stream that bubbles up and that quenches the thirst. After pointing out that the son's wife has what it takes to satisfy anybody else, he emphasizes that she belongs with him. And transforming this image from a wife being a passive receptacle to an active source of abundant satisfaction. And then he emphasizes that she is reserved for him. That the Father makes her look pretty desirable. Hey man, she's off the chain. She could have anybody else she wants. And guess who she chose? You. I know it's crazy. I don't get it either, but she did. Oh, that's what my dad says. I'm sorry, I wasn't in the text. With such a source of satisfaction, sexual, intimate, that is reserved for just this man, just this son, just this spouse, why would he seek pleasure elsewhere? Why? You know, there is more to this story. The reminder of God's gift and the reminder that the playboys have a play day. They have a payday, excuse me, not a play day. They want play dates. They get paydays. You know, the other piece here is adultery is one of the commandments. Here's how I like to remember that. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou wilt not commit adultery is the 7th commandment. Check this out. Here's how you can remember it. The walk of shame. See, the thing about losing physical intimacy is that there is a whole lot more lost than people ever realize. I think it was Coolio who said, one night of pleasure, there's 9 months of pain. 3 days later, that's when you came. Two arms, two legs, 10 fingers, 10 toes, brown eyes like mom with your grandma's nose. Y'all don't know anything about that. But the thing about adultery is that committing adultery actually puts you infringing upon more than just the seventh commandment. You have esteemed sex as a god. It has taken your time, your effort, your energy. You've changed your schedule to make time for this. You have committed false witnesses. Surely there's been a lie you've had to tell to get to this point. I swear to God, I haven't. That's not what the text say. What are these pictures about? Oh. You know, it goes on and on and on and on, and you're breaking more than just one. You have coveted your neighbor's wife, your neighbor's spouse. But nobody tells you that. Let me give you the wisdom of God here. The loss that folk experience at the result of adultery is greater than anybody could imagine. Immediately, think about legally. You've got to retain lawyers. Anybody think lawyers are cheap? Cheap? No. Oh. They're going plus 0.1 on everything. You send an email, 0.1. You make a call, 0.3. Oh. 0.3, what does that mean? 0.3 of $300 an hour. Whew. Lord, raise some lawyers in this church. You know. How about the dreams that you've had with a spouse? Maybe the dreams of children, too. Those dreams go unfulfilled, don't they? In some ways. It's tough, y'all. How about the time that you lose? You know, if you're splitting time, you've lost all this time. You want to redeem the time, but it seems lost. But what the scriptures say, and it comes down here. It says, be careful, guys and girls. Why should you be intoxicated with another and embrace the bosom of one who is an adulteress? For human ways are under the eyes of the Lord. He examines all of their paths. Their iniquities and wicked of the wicked ensnare them. They're caught in the toils of their sin. They die for lack of discipline. And because of their great folly, they are lost. Folks, sin will cost you more than you wanted to pay. It'll take you farther than you wanted to go, and it'll keep you longer than you wanted to stay. This is the truth. The truth of sin is that it is. It seems, it looks shiny, right? It looks like honey. It tastes like honey. It looks like oil. It looks like sweet. It looks good. It's what I call good from far, but far from good. The thing that you'll lose by taking another is you'll lose your status and reputation. Here it says, I'm at the point of utter ruin in the public assembly. But the truth is, that's not what you've lost. You think you have been able to skirt around the Lord, but God's eyes are on you. Now, here's the thing. I am not here to judge you unfairly. I'm here to offer caring confrontation and critique before we all run the rails off. But here's what I need from you. I need you to keep me accountable. May I keep you accountable too? Together, we can watch over each other. We can be a neighborhood. We can be a community. Edgewood Church is a thriving place. I have seen and heard the stories of people's lives transformed. And today I speak on this really difficult text because one third of Proverbs deals with this stuff. And it's a good reminder for those of us in the good times, when the waters are bubbling up perhaps. It's a good time when you're catching the rain in your cistern, you're drawing the water to drink from your well, and when you are satisfied in the streams that flow. It's a good reminder that to sacrifice that is to sacrifice much more. The blessing of God. Shall we pray?